This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump last week threw his weight behind a legislative bill aimed at immigration. But it was not a bill targeting undocumented immigration, rather legal immigration, and in particular, family sponsorship. The bill, called the RAISE Act, has made it through the House in an earlier version. This version, introduced by GOP Senators Tom Cotton and David Perdue, is being touted by the White House as a, quote, merit-based immigration system that protects our workers, our taxpayers, and our economy. But immigrant advocacy groups have denounced it as restrictionist and anti-immigrant. My guest is Megan Horn Esaheb. She is the assistant director of the group Asian Americans Advancing Justice. Welcome to the program, Megan.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's begin with what the RAISE Act is. There have been several iterations. As far as you understand, this latest iteration that's been introduced and that Trump has thrown his weight behind would do exactly what?
Yeah, so this is the second time it's been filed, and the only thing they added was this points-based system. The bill is really not about employment-based immigration or the economy. It's really about slashing the number of green cards available per year. So right now, around 1 million green cards are given out a year, and this bill would cut it by 70%. It does that by ending the family immigration system, ending the diversity lottery, and capping refugees at 50 visas per year.
So we have heard much made by the Republican Party and Trump about undocumented immigrants, people either coming over the border or those people who come to the U.S. on visas and overstay their visas. I don't think many of us expected him to go this route. Although the RAISE Act has been brought up in Congress before, as you said, it hasn't received a stamp of approval from a sitting president. Why is he going this route? Is this Trump desperately looking for some kind of legislative win because he hasn't really been able to do much else?
It's a great question. I think it is important to note there's bipartisan support for immigration generally, legal immigration, and then disagreement over the details. But there is a small minority in this country who really wants to reduce overall immigration. Unfortunately, that vocal minority are some of the most loudest vocal supporters for the president. So we really see this as throwing red meat to some in his base. The groups like the Center for Immigration Studies and Numbers USA and FAIR, which are labeled hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center, are really, they talk a lot about undocumented people, but what they really want is to lower overall immigration levels. So they see this as an opportunity for them. And, unfortunately, the president is going along with them.
So whenever you hear arguments against undocumented immigrants, you hear conservatives say, well, you should just follow the rules and get in line like other immigrants, except what this bill would do is take an already onerous system. It's not easy at all to get a green card in the U.S. and just slam the door shut on that.
Exactly. And it's important to recognize there really is no line for undocumented people. So that's... Yeah. The first falsity in that, but it is pretty telling that a lot of people do say get in line, and this is the line. There are millions of folks in the backlogs, people, family members wait anywhere between 7 or 8 and 22 years to be reunited with their family members, and this bill would cut that off. Only folks who are getting their green card within a year of enactment would get them, and everybody else would be just out of luck.
So what exactly is the status currently? This particular act was introduced by two senators. What are the odds of it actually being put into place?
So I think the odds are very low of it actually passing, but I just think it's really troubling because of the rhetoric, because of what you said before, that the president is putting his name on this, and we are seeing really an agenda of attacking immigrants from all directions. So we've seen undocumented immigrants be attacked. We've seen Muslims and folks from predominantly Muslim countries be attacked through the Muslim ban. And now this is the attack on legal immigrants. And so, you know, I think it's more concerning from a rhetorical standpoint and about the debate than it is about it actually passing.
Well, the Washington Post suggested that under the RAISE Act, President Trump's grandfather would likely not have been let into the United States.
That's right. That's right. I think, you know, if you look at who it's, you have to kind of predict under the point system, but who would be let in? People with advanced degrees get points. High English language ability folks get points. Younger people get points. We find it particularly troubling, the treatment of middle-aged and elder people. People over 50 get 0 points. It prefers people aged 26 to 30. And as well, the way it treats parents of U.S. citizens and lawful permanent residents, they can only sponsor their parents for temporary visas. And so you could have, you know, people coming here and living here for 20 years for the rest of their lives and never have a path to citizenship and never have work authorization. And those people can only come if their children can, and I mean adult children, can afford to pay for their health insurance. So it would really only be available to wealthier people.
So, for example, me as a U.S. citizen whose parents live abroad, if I ever wanted to bring my elderly parents to the United States to live out the rest of their lives with me, if Trump had his way, I might not be able to do that, or just on a temporary visa, basically.
Right, if it's not, so long as you can pay for their health insurance.
So this idea of a merit-based immigration system, say you have highly skilled workers, which of course you do in this country already, have that in place. If that person coming to the U.S., contributing to the U.S. economy, wanted to actually, you know, live with their family, wanted to, say, bring their wife and kids, would this policy impact that?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good point. So under the merit, or that's the only way really new immigrants will be coming, that are marrying somebody abroad. So they'll come in if they're lucky enough to get the points to come. They can bring their spouse and they can bring their children under 18. That's another change the bill makes, because under current law, people can bring children under 21. And then if they have children over 18, they could never sponsor them. If they have siblings or parents they want to bring, again, the parents wouldn't be able to come on green cards and the siblings would never be able to be sponsored.
So in a way, this is an attack on families.
Yes, very much so.
Because it's the idea of family sponsorship that this is going after. So much for a family values-based party.
Exactly.
How do Asians in particular get impacted by such a law, such a bill, if it were to become law? Asian Americans are the fastest growing immigrant group in the United States. Certainly there are undocumented Asian immigrants who might come here on a visa and overstay their visa. But what about those Asians who come in through the legal processes, you know, jumping over all of the hurdles that are put in place? Would the RAISE Act disproportionately impact Asians trying to emigrate to the U.S.?
Yeah, I think it would. There's about 22 million Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, and Native Hawaiians in the U.S. right now, and two-thirds are immigrants, and 92% are immigrants or the children of immigrants. So it is a very growing, newer, in a lot of places, newer communities. And the vast majority of them come through the family-based immigration system. So it, you know, it's, the bill is also offensive in that way. It seems like there is a effort to stop the growing diversity in our country. You know, some Asians from particular countries tend to benefit from the employment-based system more than others. So that probably won't change too much, but again, those people wouldn't be able to bring their families. So it'll sharply reduce the number of Asian immigrants coming to the U.S.
So basically, the idea is immigrants are only going to be allowed in if they can contribute to the U.S. economy, but not to their own, like, personal happiness. can come in, work in the U.S., but you can't, you know, bring members of your extended family.
Right, and we're concerned about the gender implications as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we know, caregivers tend to be women, and that is undervalued and often not valued work, right? So, but they contribute to, so folks who are either paid or unpaid contribute to the economy. So if, you know, some people rely on their bringing their parents over to take care of their children while they're working. And we also see still some women not having as many opportunities in other countries for higher levels of education. And so we're concerned about who will get in through the merit-based system, and will that be mostly men?
Is there also a special emphasis placed on immigrants who can speak English fluently?
Yes, it's points-based.
That's another,
Yes, that's another, you know, it will affect certain countries more than others. And, you know,
so countries where people already speak English, basically largely white countries, you know, Europe, Australia, they would basically get an unfair advantage in this system, which historically they always have anyway.
Exactly. And, you know, the diversity lottery, this whole system was created in 1965, Immigration and Nationality Act, to end what was a racist quota-based system that preferenced Northern and Western Europeans. And so,
Trump,
you know,
wants to go back to that.
Advocates of this bill attack that law. You know, we have, it raises a lot of red flags about whether, how they're trying to keep the country composed of more white and European people, essentially.
So what about U.S. citizens who marry non-U.S. citizens? That is also a common way of getting a green card. You said that the number of green cards given out would be slashed by 70%. Is the 30% that's preserved going to include, you know, people who want their, you know, want their spouses to have a path to citizenship?
Yeah, so right now, if folks marry somebody outside the country, there's no cap. So if it could be, and I don't know the numbers on that, but, you know, any number of U.S. citizens marry somebody outside the U.S., they can bring them in pretty quickly within a year. It takes processing time. And for the, under this bill, what they are calling the family provisions are just that people can sponsor spouses and minor children under 18, and that is capped at 88,000. So I'm not sure how that plays out. I don't, but that would include everybody marrying who are marrying people outside the country, and they might, you know, get stepchildren or people who. That's pretty much it. So I'm not sure how quickly that cap will be reached, but you could see a situation where people are backlogged just to get their spouse in the country. Hmm.
So, Megan, let's also talk about the fact that there has been in this administration a pretty overt sort of antagonism toward Asians and Asian Americans, even in the United States. I mean, you've had, you know, comments on the record by people like Steve Bannon saying there are too many Asian CEOs. You have attacks on affirmative action that often impact Asians disproportionately, or get this impression that Asians are the ones that are taking jobs away. You might have Latinos accused of taking away low wage jobs by white conservatives. Asians being accused of taking the high wage jobs here in the U.S. and Asians abroad taking the, you know, the telemarketing jobs from Americans. Does that, you think, play into these debates and dialogues on immigration?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, we do see this as really a white nationalist agenda where that part of this country, white nationalists are really have the ear of the president and certain people in the administration, and all of these policies sort of work together to attack people of color.
So we talked again about the earlier about how it's unlikely this bill will actually pass, but you never know these days. What sort of Democratic support is there, if any, on a bill like this? Because unfortunately, Democrats haven't been good enough on the issue of immigration in the past. They've held the line on healthcare pretty strongly because, of course, they were trying to protect President Obama's legacy. But on immigration, are they going to sell immigrants out?
I don't think so, not on this bill. We have concerns about, I think, enforcement bills are where some Democrats are most likely to give in, and we've seen them already. So, you know, part of the agenda which is more focused on undocumented or lawful permanent residents with convictions, is to further demonize them, increase sentencing, increase the crime, like immigration status related crimes, and increase funding for enforcement. That's where we're really worried about Democrats. But I think on this bill generally is anti-immigrant. And I think most Democrats get that. And even some Republicans, I know some Republicans have already spoken out against it. So.
Right. I mean, you know, going back to what we started out talking about, the rhetorical line for people to get into if they want to legally immigrate to the U.S. as it is for undocumented immigrants, there isn't a line. And of course, if we want to talk about immigration, what we want to talk about is creating a really fair system that undocumented immigrants can actually legalize their status so they are not living in fear. Those discussions, those dialogues just seem out of the realm of Washington these days. There was a time when comprehensive immigration reform was a thing people talked about, and it seems like that's just been abandoned now.
Yeah, some members of Congress still, you know, use those talking points. Right now, though, unfortunately, we're trying to protect what rights are out there. So that's mainly the DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, and the Temporary Protected Status programs, which have to be renewed by the Secretary of Homeland Security. So what we're looking at is, unfortunately, you know, I think it's close to 800,000 DACA recipients losing their work authorization in the next few months. And then I think it's over a million people with temporary protected status who also have a right to be here and work authorization. And so that could be devastating to a lot of communities. So we've just turned to a more defensive posture, but I think people still stand behind placing undocumented immigrants on a path to citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Megan, give out a website where people can find out more about your organization.
Yes, it's advancingjustice-aajc.org.
We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Megan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Megan Horn Esaheb. She is the assistant director of the group Asian Americans Advancing Justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.